Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, we welcome back Melody Wright. She is a fantastic housing analyst and someone we rely on for great information on where the housing market is going. Melody, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Melody, let's get straight to your take on the housing market. You've been flagging Texas and Florida, especially looking at dangers going into next year. Of late, you've started to see some data sour in California. Give us your high-level take on the housing market.
Yeah, so we're exiting the typical season. I think when I was last on your show, we talked about the fact that we were in the middle of the spring buying and selling season when there is a lot of activity. And so, June sales came in very low for both new and existing homes. But then July, we had kind of an uptick in both existing and new home sales. What we don't know is there were three extra calendar days in July when you compare to 2023 to when you compare month over month. And so there were extra calendar days. That could be part of it. But as well, it could be what you're seeing in a lot of markets where you're seeing sales up, you're also seeing prices down. And so I think that what we're starting to see is some motivated selling. And so, like you said, you know, what's important about Florida is they exited their season, and really they exited their season in May. And so they've kind of, their inventory is slowing, but I imagine that we'll actually see that inventory pick up again in October. But price declines are also accelerating in Florida, and the inventory down there is just so massive. And when I say inventory going down, we have to remember, those are the data. So I track a lot of data sources, but the ones that like Realtor.com, Zillow. So Realtor.com is kind of who feeds the FRED series that the Fed has on its website, FRED. And we see those listings go down. However, they don't have a lot of new homes on their sites. And even if they do list one of the homes, typically they'll list one home when there may be 300 in that subdivision. And so that's kind of what I mean about inventory going down. Because if you go to any of these Florida cities, you're going to find massive amounts of new build inventory, as well as existing inventory that's not being listed. And so what I really think is we're kind of in the inflection point where this is where the seasonal headwinds are actually going to really kind of be the wind at our back, actually, for home price declines, meaning that because we're on this tail end of the season where you go back 25 years, home prices will decline during this time period, except for, you know, the boom years. And so we are going to see that naturally. And we saw that month over month in all of this series. But now, because we have kind of unemployment increasing and, of course, layoffs increasing as well, I think that's going to be the wind at our back. So these might decelerate a lot faster than I think some people are thinking. And then California specifically, you know, really prices have held up there. It's been kind of a, you know, for a very long time, that market hasn't made sense. When you look at median income and you look at what prices, you know, what homes are selling for. But I think a lot of that had to do with foreign ownership. And, you know, we got a recent article, I think it was CNN, you know, that decreased 37% year over year in terms of foreign buyers buying in the United States. And so I think as you're seeing globally, these macroeconomic headwinds, no one is doing that great right now in their economy. That foreign buying has stopped. And I think that's a lot of what held the California market up. And you're seeing definitely month over month prices come down and sales increasing, which tells you that there's motivated selling occurring. And what I mean by that is not distressed. It's just somebody looking up and saying, hey, you know, this might be a good time. If I have multiple properties, if I'm a mom and pop investor, this might be a good time to offload and take some money off the table.
The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults where you hold two of three keys and benefit from a Bitcoin security partner. This is a really important feature. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage with Unchained's trading desk and completely eliminate your exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA product in the industry. You can convert easily your 401k or IRA into Bitcoin while keeping control of your keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Go talk to them today, unchained.com/TBL, and make sure you use code TBL for $99 off when you create an account. It's a very fascinating time. I want to just ask you really quickly to specify for the audience about foreign buying. The reason we like your data, Melody, is you're a stickler for data.
Yes.
And I really like the, when you mentioned the calendar days, it reminds me of my days on the treasury desk. And if there's one extra day in the repo contract, or if there's one extra day in the month, you have to account for that on your interest rate differentials. So all of that matters. The reason that I want to ask you about foreign data, foreign buying, is because in each contract, it is part of each real estate transaction legally by United States law, right? That we have to have a disclosure if there's a foreign buyer or seller in the transaction. So can you explain how we extract that data and why you believe it's high signal?
So it's very hard to extract that data. I mean, in aggregate. So, you know, we have over 3,000 counties in this country. Each county has its own local specific rules around recording documents. And that's how you're going to find these documents. So, and in California, you can't even get those documents online, whereas in many states you can. Like in Florida, they have the Sunshine Laws. You can go find all of these recorded deeds, documents that would probably have information like that. Or the other way that you could find it is through the HMDA data, or the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act. Likely it would be somewhere there, but that's a year delayed a lot of times, you know, 6 months delayed. It takes a long time for that data to come out. So it's very difficult to find this information. You have to, you know, one thing that I've been doing is I've kind of targeted one California community that I'm just going through what the available records that I can find to try to prove this out, that I think it's the foreigner selling. But what we can do is, like, I think it was Realtor.com or Redfin that supplied CNN with its information. And what they're doing there is they're taking that info out of the MLS, more than likely, which we don't have access to. So it's difficult. But I think, you know, a lot of people said for the longest time, well, the Chinese will never sell. And they were a big part of the market in California and Florida, because, you know, it would be safe to have their money here. But I think a lot of things changed when we started, you know, when Russia declared war against Ukraine and we started seizing assets. I think people got a little bit nervous that that would happen to them. And then we had the bank crisis, where there was actually a lot of Chinese money in SVP. They were saved, luckily, but you never know the next time around. And so I think, you know, not only, I think that would be a high signal to me, because in these markets like California and Florida, that buying has really held up prices. And you can talk to local realtors in these places, and this is anecdata, but, you know, it's kind of like trading cards in those communities. People were just kind of trading them around. And so I think that that could really take the wind, or really kind of take the air out of the balloon, I guess is what I should say. And the fact that they're pulling back means that more than likely they're selling as well. But I hope to prove it out. Just like you say, in the data, is just extremely difficult.
So let's talk about Texas and Florida. We're interested in some of the data you're seeing on the ground. What are you seeing in terms of inventory picking up, the new build that you mentioned? So I would recommend people go check out our last episode with Melody, in which she describes the process of shadow inventory and how that exists. But let's just assume people have watched that. Discuss the shadow inventory and what's going on in those two states. with regards to that dynamic?
Yeah, it's really insane. And, you know, I took my first trips back in February of 2023, and there's even more inventory. But essentially what the builders do, and a lot of people say this isn't new, but they really don't advertise these new builds. And they've so historically, before this recent boom, they would build to, you would say to them, hey, I want to build a house. And then they would build that to your specifications. Okay. But what they transitioned to a lot of was building speculative homes, like homes that didn't have necessarily a buyer. And they were doing these build for rent communities. And so you have the national builders, and then you have the local and regional, and none of them are talking to each other. And so you go to a lot of these cities, and honestly, like driving from Austin to San Antonio is just one big new build site. But you go to somewhere like Denver, you drive from Colorado Springs up north, past Fort Collins. It's the same thing. I mean, they're everywhere. And pretty much you go, I was living in Pittsburgh, wherever there was empty land, there was a new build. And so the thing is, they don't list these on the listing sites. And also, they don't count them as completed. They're not really completed until that certificate of occupancy is filed. And as we get to this point of the year, a lot of times it would make sense to slow roll those completions for tax purposes, because once that certificate of occupancy is filed, then you're taxed on not only the land, but also the land and the property. And so what you've got out there is a lot of homes are built for speculation that are completed, but likely not officially completed. And so this makes it very difficult when you're trying to look at this stuff in aggregate to understand what the true inventory is. But I can just tell you, based on going to these markets myself, like somewhere like Lakewood Ranch, Florida, over 20 communities there in process, just a ton of inventory that nobody's really talking about.
So is there a crisis in speculative home new build in, I know you like to focus on localized, but are there localized crises? And is this going to result in 30%+ price declines on aggregate in some of these areas over the next year to 2 years?
Yeah, there's definitely a crisis building in many cities in Texas and Florida, Arizona, Las Vegas, Denver, Asheville, Charlotte. I mean, really all over the country where these new builds kind of went. And each market will behave a little bit differently. But I would say, you know, my base case is we're going to start to see price declines at the end of this year. But 2025 is where we would see, in my opinion, a double digit price decline, but not necessarily on a national average at 30%, more like 12 to 13% in 25, and then kind of further declines from there. Housing moves very slowly. However, if we get some sort of credit event or, you know, these job losses accelerate, then I think that timing speeds up. But we have just gotten to a point of complete unaffordability. There just aren't any people left to buy these homes. And the top 20%, there's only so much carrying costs they want to, you know, they want to show on their individual profit and loss statements. You know, it just doesn't make sense to carry 10 properties and even 3 properties. Like, for instance, down in Miami, if you want a housekeeper to keep up with your property down there, it's about $150,000 to find a housekeeper. So, I mean, even the super rich don't want to carry these costs.
Let's talk about delinquencies, because that's really what we're focusing on. The delinquencies lead foreclosures, which lead inventory build and price cuts simultaneously. It's the worst case scenario, right, is a foreclosure wave for the housing market in general. So you have some stats about delinquencies. You're focusing on a high delinquency rate from the 2021 vintage, and that's just vernacular for the year that those mortgages were taken out. So people that bought in 2021 are seeing these 13% delinquency rates. What are your thoughts on delinquencies here? And I know you have focused on FHA delinquencies, and FHA being an increasing part of the market relative to the last mega crisis that we had in 07?
Yes. Okay. So just, it's a little confusing, but so that 13% is really that 2021 makes up 13% of all the delinquent loans. So they're a larger number, whereas 2022 is actually it's actually more delinquent than 2021. But what that is telling you, so you know, I come from the mortgage business. And you don't typically see delinquencies in that first 12 years of origination. And if you start to see, first 12 months of origination. And if you start to see that, then you know that there is something wrong. And what could it be? And for instance, you take that 2021 vintage that I show in the Substack, and you can see its first year of origination, it did okay. But then as the PPP loans, as the ERC tax credits, as all of our bank accounts started to drain, then you really started to see deteriorating, you know, credit quality there. And these folks started not performing. And so, you know, what I'm really trying to focus on, because the foreclosure wave is a long way out. And that is because of just all of these rules that have kind of come into play after the great financial crisis. And so it'll take a long time, especially because Fannie and Freddie, and that's your government sponsored enterprises, have come up with a new loan modification program, which is going to target a 20% payment reduction. And they're going to do that by extending out your mortgage 40 years, maybe interest rate reductions, things like that, maybe even principal reduction. So what's going to happen right now is that all these people that are coming into that new delinquency is they're going to hit their servicer's books, and they'll probably get caught up in a loan modification or some sort of repayment plan very quickly. But then what you're going to see are the people that fall out of those. But what's important is that there's a whole cohort that has already taken all of the available workouts that they have, as well as you have investors who are starting to walk away. And so I agree with you that foreclosures do bring that inventory, but it may be that in this instance, it's going to be a little different where, yeah, you're going to have inventory already probably on the market. If they're in distress, they're going to be probably trying to sell if they have somewhere else to go, and they have enough equity in their homes. But then there are going to be those that learn from the last crisis that they'll probably be able to hang out in their property for a while, based on the moratoriums and everything like that. And then you're going to have the investors who just say, I'm done. I'm going to walk away. But I think what's interesting is that because we've had all these all cash sales, the foreclosures may, or the distressed properties may end up in bankruptcies. And also the counties, on the county's books versus on the bank books, because the counties will have these unpaid tax liens, and counties move very slowly. So I know I'm throwing out a whole bunch of information, but I think what I'm trying to really say is that, you know, although I do think we're going to have those foreclosures, they're going to happen, it's going to take some time. But in the meantime, your consumer is coming under a lot of stress. And so therefore they aren't going to be out there buying or renting new luxury. And so, in terms of the true price declines, I think are going to come from motivated selling or distressed selling.
Okay, Melody. So we're talking about how there's absolutely a problem in these new inventory builds, that we have, the vintage of 2021, having a large portion of the delinquencies, but really these later years are actually having delinquencies at an accelerated pace, and that we won't have necessarily explicit foreclosures. That's the traditional way to think about this, but it's actually more of loan mods, shadow foreclosures, problems with the agencies. So just take it away.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people are waiting for that huge foreclosure wave. What I think people need to understand is, in reality, you know, especially, you know, the foreclosure crisis didn't end in 2008. In fact, it was just getting started. And you know, when I took over default at my company, that was when they had the highest sort of foreclosures in their pipeline, and that was in 2012. And so, you know, it wasn't necessarily that we had a ton of foreclosures that created that price discovery last time. It was the distress. And I think that because back then, a lot of the large servicers were told they could not foreclose while they were kind of under investigation for, you know, Robers signing some bad practices during that time. And so I think that's what you're going to have again, is you're going to have a whole bunch of people in distress. And now I don't see that distress building into a material population until probably June of 2025. But people will be trying to sell on the margins. And when that happens, because they simply cannot carry this anymore, you are going to see those price declines. And so I think similar to the GFC, we're not going to have one massive foreclosure wave. We're just going to have a whole bunch of people in distress all at once. And a lot of them will have used all of their workouts out already, because we had GFC style intervention already. And people had those forbearances for 18 months. They went into what was called a payment deferral, where they put all that money at the back of their loan to be paid off when they pay off their loan or sell their house. And that's also going to cause a problem, because if prices start to come down, so does loan to value, or in essence, your equity starts to come down. And then when you need to turn around and sell, if you have one of those payment deferrals, it's, you know, it's an extra $20,000, $30,000. And depending on where your equity position is, and we know that those borrowers in 21, 22, 23, look worse from an equity perspective, because they bought in at the top, a lot of them using those low down payment loans through FHA or other government sort of, you know, programs. And so it is impactful, but we aren't going to see a foreclosure wave simply because of the way that the rules are written and the process, how it works.
Now, as you've been describing this whole dynamic, I'm getting these panic feelings about how low rates will go, similar to actually the way I felt in 2019, seeing the way that the money markets were starting to crumble. There's just a dynamic that will send rates lower in response to all of this weakness. And I'm just anticipating all of that. My question to you comes down to the mortgage market. We know we have the Fed on one side as the buyer, a lot of this MBS. We have trillions in MBS outstanding. It's protected, like you said, in the form of being in a government-sponsored enterprise. But if there are loan mods and there are delays in payment, who bears the brunt of that? Is the Fed going to be forced to come back into the market? Why aren't mortgage spreads blowing out? Or maybe that's something that you're watching. Talk to us about the mortgage market, the MBS market.
Yeah, I watch this very closely. And, you know, to your point, front-end rates may come down, but the 10-year and treasury, which is what the mortgage market sort of, you know, that is, it's really the world's borrowing rate, but that is what the mortgage market watches closely. And you're seeing a very wide spread right now between that 10-year and mortgage rates, because the Fed is not buying and because there's no one out there aggressively buying these mortgage-backed securities. Now, these things are kind of, you know, people buy them to pledge them as collateral. They're considered safe assets and things like that. But I don't foresee if the Fed comes back in that that is going to be a little crazy, and that would cause inflation. I mean, house price inflation. This is the reason we're in this position right now, is because the Fed went off buying MBS a lot longer than they should. But who bears the cost of this? So initially, it's your non-bank servicers who are going to bear the brunt of all of these expenses and foreclosure costs. And that government guarantee, well, you know, think about the last insurance claim you ever filed. You know, did they pay you right away? Did you have, especially on the medical world, did it take some time to get paid? So what'll happen is these non-banks won't get paid timely. In the meantime, they're advancing out all this money and it becomes a real liquidity burn. And so, you know, essentially they are going to be cash strapped as well. They won't be buying MBS anymore. So, you know, I don't see mortgage rates coming down to where they were previously unless the Fed steps in, and we will have to be in some dire straits, I think, for that to happen, because I think they realized what the repercussions and the situation we're in now is largely because they did that and they stayed in the market for so long.
This is a fantastic point, and this is really combining your area of expertise with what we focus on. And we look really closely at the Fed's balance sheet, Melody, as you know, on a week-to-week basis. And we also read the Fed speeches, and what they have been signaling for a long time is that they want to exit the mortgage market.
Right.
We understand that communication, but we also understand this other side of the equation, which is that they might not be able to. They might be forced to come back in. And if they don't, what happens to that basis between the 10-year yield and the going mortgage rate? And, you know, even if 10-year yields come down, that doesn't necessarily mean that mortgage yields come down. They reference 10-year yields, but there's a spread there. And that spread is largely a function of the demand for MBS, which if the Fed is not there, then there will be a gap in funding. And so all of it doesn't mean we know what's going to happen. It just means that, hey, there's a potential bomb that will go off on the repayment of the MBS side and therefore the desirability for that asset class and therefore the spread of that asset versus treasury yields. And if the Fed isn't a buyer, then there's a problem there. So I'm wondering your reaction to that.
I agree 100%. And actually, I don't know if you follow Richard Whalen. You know, he's a, I would call him he's still an industry insider, where I've now become an outsider to, you know, largely. But he even said that that could be muted if they did these credit risk, like securitizations, these credit risk transfers, that in actuality, even if they did step in, that they may not, the Fed may not have the same impact they did previously. Now, this is something I haven't completely tested out, just kind of in my own thinking, but it was something he mentioned very recently, because like you, I was like, well, you know, it's only if the Fed steps in. But he seems to be saying even if the Fed steps in, because the way the securitization markets are working right now, in terms of those credit risk transfers, where, you know, they even rehypothecate the securitization, which is kind of crazy. And this is something the big banks have been doing a lot, that you wouldn't get that, you wouldn't see the spread tighten because of that. And so I'm not sure, I haven't tested it out completely, but I think that you're absolutely right. And people should not be expecting mortgage rates to come down here unless there is some massive intervention, and likely even more than what they did previously, if, you know, Richard Whalen is to be believed.
And there are trillions of MBS securities that are owned that could easily swap out and into treasuries, sending treasury yields lower, mortgage rates higher, widening that basis and sending a crisis into one asset class that will support treasuries, because treasuries will function as the risk-off instrument in that dynamic.
Exactly. So
a lot to consider. I want to get your final thoughts here, just going into Q4. You've mentioned that, you know, they'll be slowing in 2025. We're going to get a wave. How bad is it going to get, Melody?
Yeah, so it's right now, if nothing else changed, I think that we'll see, you know, a material delinquency in June of 25, meaning just sort of that we won't be arguing about where the consumer is anymore. And you'll have more people that are in these loss mitigation programs are moving forward through the foreclosure process. But I honestly think in October, we're going to start to see inventory increase again, especially in places like Florida. But if we start to see this wobbliness in the stock market that, you know, we've seen recently, if that persists, then I think California, what you're going to see at the end of this year is going to be a lot of motivated selling. And so there's a lot going on. I think that's my most important message, that this is where I'm really grateful I have all the foundation of this data, because these really anything could happen. To the path to me is clear in terms of seeing that almost double digit, around 13% price decline in 2025. But anything could happen to accelerate the path. And of course, government intervention could also come in a little bit to slow it down. But I do think 2025 is going to be the year that is going to be the hardest for the housing market. But what's most important right now, in my opinion, is we just have to be watching very closely and watching a lot more metrics than that top line, like Case-Shiller or things like that, because I think you're about to see that. I think we've really crossed a serious inflection point here. And so this is the time to be watching.
And I do have one more question, and it's because as a housing analyst, you are looking at my world constantly. And as a macro analyst, we're looking at your world constantly. We're trying to get a beat on the consumer and the aftermath of the labor situation, or maybe an alternate read on it. You're trying to look at macro to get a lead on what's going to impact housing. And so it really is a combination of two frameworks here. My question to you on that front is the feedback, you're watching labor weakness and thinking about how it's going to impact housing. I'm also thinking about housing slowdown broadly and the feedback loop into labor, because we know how much of the employment or how much of the labor market is supporting just by housing, by the builders, and then the selling side of things, and then the maintenance side of things. I mean, there's so much. We've publicized, you know, that a quarter of the economy, up to a quarter of the economy,
yeah,
is how. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, I think, you just hit it, and I'm sorry I didn't even talk about it. But, you know, as we're seeing this weakness in construction employment, you know, when I was traveling to all of these places, you knew when you were about to get to one of these sites, because you would see a new public storage, you'd see a new car wash, you'd see a new coffee shop, you know, those little, and then also you see signs for lawn care to install pools, or maybe the new nursery that was being built, and maybe they needed new teachers. Okay, when all of this slows down, then all of those jobs go away. You know, the coffee cart that's supplying to the construction worker, you know, the hotels that are putting the construction workers up. And I mean, this is something I very much saw down in Texas and Florida, that all the temporary help that was down there, which I think a lot of people thought that temporary help was there to stay. You know, maybe they were doing a long-term rental. But as all of that closes up shop, just those domino effects are going to be massive. And so I think that I agree with you. I always say 16 to 20%, but I think that 25% makes sense because of all of these ancillary services that supply construction. And when people start packing up those trucks, it's going to have a huge impact, especially these local communities that I don't think people are expecting.
Housing is the leader in terms of the generation of employment and the demand there, you know, for the economy itself as people build. Melody Wright, thank you so much for joining us and for providing us with your housing analysis and expertise. Please tell people where they can read your ongoing analysis.
Sure. They can find me at M3 Melody Substack.
Great. And we'll make sure to link that. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you.